Welcome back, guys.
Thanks.
Hello.
I'm here with Joe and Nick.
Did you watch the live stream of the Writers Guild Awards?
No.
I didn't even know it was happening.
No, I did not.
I don't even know what won.
It was exceptionally boring. Basically have awards for everything, and they have tons of tributes. And I watched for like an hour, and they gave out like only a video game prize in that time.
It was longer than an hour?
Yes.
I guess if you're going to make people dress up and come out, there's maybe a little pressure to put on a full-length show, but like, yikes.
Yeah. Maybe you don't turn on the live stream quite yet. I don't know.
Well, I did get to get reacquainted with Jennifer Tilly, who was introducing their version of the Humanitarian Prize.
Which went to whom?
To her ex-husband. Simon, I forget his last name, but he is a writer on The Simpsons and many other things.
Oh.
And he has cancer, unfortunately. Oh. So he doesn't have long to live, like, so he did a whole speech about that.
Oh, gosh.
But they were... They're divorced, but they seemed really to like each other. It was a really actually a funny back and forth.
Sam Simon, The Simpsons
okay
producer guy. Yeah. Oh, wow.
So apparently he has all these, like, a charity organization, and he does all this stuff for animals. And so she was introducing him, and of course Jennifer Tilly, so she's delightful.
Yes, we love Jennifer Tilly.
And her voice is still, I could just close my eyes and just reminisce of so many favorite movie moments.
You can see how she winds up with a guy who makes a cartoon.
Right?
Yeah, for sure. You can see how a guy who makes a cartoon ends up with her.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Her won Best Original Screenplay. And Captain Phillips won Adapted Screenplay. Yeah.
And that was kind of the free-for-all because 12 Years a Slave wasn't...
Right, because the Writers Guild, you know, famously each year they at least, you know, two or three of the big contenders each year are not eligible for their award.
Yeah.
You know, so they've had pressure over the years to change their rules so that that doesn't happen, but in some ways it makes it interesting because they can't vote the same way as everyone else.
I do find that as the season goes along, I end up valuing these awards that have weird restrictions just because as artificial as they are, it forces people, like you said, to sort of make different choices.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's not just, I mean, we can't extrapolate from the WGA winners to the Oscar winners just because they're just not choosing from the same field. And you don't even know, even if it's a minor change to the nominees, like, you don't know who pulls votes from who.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, is the original screenplay between WGA and Oscar the same? I didn't bother to look it up.
Because
I know American Hustle and Her are both nominated for...
Yes, and as is Dallas Buyers Club.
And Blue Jasmine. I don't know, it's a guild award, it's a different award. Why? I agree, why... Mm-hmm. Why revise their rules to, like, give an award to somebody who's not in their guild, especially since writers need as much protection as they can get? Like, the guild should be strong, even though it's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, so it is actually the same nominees.
It is the same,
because Nebraska is the fifth one there.
And writing, it's Captain Phillips, Wolf of Wall Street, and Before Midnight, which were nominated for WGA, plus 12 Years a Slave and Philomena.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of which, we got Lone Survivor and what?
August Osage County.
Oh.
August Osage County.
God, that's mean to say this because that's all good work, but that seems like kind of a sad category.
Well, when the WGA nominees came out, and this was sort of the predicted nominees, with Lone Survivor being the one that filled the slot that most people, I think, just put up question marks for.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Nobody really knew what the fifth one was because there's this. That thing that happens in award season where what becomes a likely nominee versus everything else. Like, short-term 12 was just not a possibility because nobody assumed, like, that's just not an award, it's not a guild award movie, you know what I mean? Like, once things got past the point of, like, the indie spirits and the critics, like, that just stopped being a possibility for whatever reason. And Lone Survivor wasn't because it was a studio movie and... was widely released and all that kind of thing. But Stories We Tell won the documentary
It did. So and that... I was really pleased about that because I do think it is a very easy example of how documentaries are actually written.
Well, yeah, I feel like that's almost probably an easy call just because even if you, even beyond the fact that the movie I think is great and is wonderful and everything like that, it's also the example of like, well, there was the first write in that. Like, that was the most written of the documentaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Certainly that were nominated.
Right. So American Society of Cinematographers chose Yesterday as well, which was Gravity.
Okay.
The Annie Awards also, so it was a big awards day.
Yeah, Frozen won that, right?
And Frozen won that. Although The Wind Rises apparently won something, like screenplay.
I don't know how I feel about that going into the Academy Awards. I don't know whether I feel like that's a race or whether that's me hoping that there's a race just because I like interesting categories.
I had always assumed it was a total runaway, but then many people online keep talking about other songs besides Let It Go.
Oh, I mean in animated film.
No, I know, but it's just an example of...
Oh, I see.
...that I had assumed Frozen will have no trouble whatsoever winning both of its nominations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then people keep drumming up interest in the other candidates.
Well, all those alone yet not alone votes have to go somewhere.
That's right.
Who will reap that whirlwind? That's actually an interesting thought exercise. Of the people who would have voted for Alone Yet Not Alone, would they vote for her? Would they vote for Mandela?
Yeah, I mean, all three of those movies are about people who are alone yet not alone.
Yeah.
So if that's what you're into.
Well, even Frozen.
That's what I mean.
And Frozen, honestly, just...
Mandela, her, like, geez.
It's the all-purpose title.
It really is. Well, I said that when that got nominated. I was like, there really are so many movies this year. Captain Phillips, like, there's a lot that could have been subtitled, let's say.
Maybe we should do that for 2014, like every movie that fits, add a colon.
I just saw Frozen again the other night, and I just think it's so good. I really, really like that movie a lot.
I watched
That's my it. Profound observation.
Yeah, I watched it again, too, and it's very enjoyable.
Ooh, God bless.
That was the boyfriend.
Ah.
I figured that was Monty.
Well, oh. Monty's been sneezing, too, which is why he's going to the vet today. Plus, he's very old, and so you should take him to the vet once in a while.
Yeah. Oh. And speaking of very old, wait, help me segue this. Something, anything. Bruce Dern? That feels mean. I don't know.
I can see Bruce Dern being cast as a very old cat. He's getting there.
Well, when the Cats musical movie happens...
He could play Grisabella.
Yes, absolutely. Why not? Why the heck not?
He's never going to be in a hotter casting window than he is right now.
There is no way that they would not cast Meryl Streep as Grisabella at this point in history.
That's true. Like,
the way that casting goes...
Well, and also she can sing, so...
And she can sing. I'm looking forward to Into the Woods, I have to say. I know being friends with as many Broadway gays as I am, there's a lot of hand-wringing about it, but I'm cautiously optimistic. Can I say that?
You can say whatever you want.
That is the least supportive, though, ever, is just like, you can say it. Your mouth can make the words and push those out.
So, did you guys happen to catch the TCM doc on the Oscars?
I didn't.
I saw you tweeting about it, but
this was last night. It's apparently a new one, and it was really, really disorganized. Like, it kind of just whatever it was talking about, it just sort of like, you know, train of thought careened into the next topic.
Was it just like highlights, or was it like interesting behind the scenes stories?
It was kind of like everything. I mean, it was super disorganized. Like, I think it was an excuse to just, like, show, like, a million film clips and a million, like, little tiny tidbits from different ceremonies.
Did it show Cher pronouncing Marvin Hamlish as Marvin Hamlishmish? Because that's still my favorite Oscar moment of all time.
It did not, but Cher did get some airtime.
Sure. She's been an enduring Oscar highlight.
So the funnest part of it for me was people talk about their Oscar wins and, you know, just what they were feeling and how they weren't processing what was actually happening to them, which is not exactly a revelation.
Who said the most interesting stuff?
Well, I really thought Helen Mirren was interesting just because she was such a steamroller.
Yeah.
But she seemed really genuine about, like, I just couldn't, you know, process that it was happening, and, you know. And she was just talking about how you just don't feel like you're out of body experience. And then, you know, Cher said the same thing. I think Cher said that she felt like she went deaf when it was happening.
I love that Cher and Helen Mirren feel the same thing.
Well, when it comes time to make the Tea with Mussolini sequel, we can cast Helen.
Where's their buddy cop movie? Cher and Helen Mirren.
Oh, my God. Put that out into the universe right now. Just
do you guys remember that?
They seem like they'd both be really into each other. They like to fish out those old teats.
Do you guys remember that buddy movie that never got made that like Demi Moore and Madonna were threatening to make for a while?
No, but threatening is the right word.
Two friendless women in a buddy comedy. Perfect.
Oh, but I just...
Two women who just... Yeah, whatever.
But I just remembered who said the most interesting thing.
Who?
On the doc. It was Ellen Burstyn.
I could see that.
Oh.
She was talking about Jenna Rollins in A Woman Under the Influence.
Oh my God, say everything she said word for word.
So they were showing clips from A Woman Under the Influence.
Yeah.
And Ellen Burstyn was basically talking over the clips about how, like, that is an Oscar-winning performance. That is, like, you know, this, you know, seminal, you know. And she should have totally won the Oscar, but not mine. So I thought that was...
Wow.
I thought that was interesting because... That's probably how people feel when someone else is spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
You know, wow. like that but people don't vocalize it, you know?
What was the tone you took away from all of that was like, man, I really do love her, but man, am I happy I won? Or was this like, okay. Because I feel like the little shade needle just like moved there for a second, but I wasn't.
No, because she was clearly like that as a seminal, like perfect performance.
Yeah. Well, it does kind of, you know, the looks of surprise in the other nominees' faces when the name was not Jenna Rollins are memorable.
Yeah.
Oh, was Ellen not supposed to win?
She wasn't there either.
It wasn't clear, but Jenna Rollins had won the Globe, I think, and and she wasn't there, and A Woman Under the Influence had gotten that directing nomination, which is like a crazy thing for John Cassavetes to.
Yeah.
Be on Oscar's radar anyway, so I think it looked like a lot of signs were pointing in that direction. But.
So, in the sort of revisionist history games that we tend to play, if Jenna Rollins is the one who was supposed to win that one, was Ellen supposed to, like, do we give Ellen another one?
I think this way lies madness.
This is the whole sort of, like, if we give Denzel the Oscar for Malcolm X... Who wins in 2001 kind of thing. I don't know. I like these little...
I think 1974 Best Actress should always have been the five-way tie that we just...
The only five-way tie in history.
Just sort of like the Emmys moment when they all got on stage before the winner was announced, and you all win! It just would have been perfect.
The other three were who?
Diane Carroll, Faye Dunaway for Chinatown, and Valerie Perrin for Lenny.
They're all
amazing.
Pretty amazing category.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, you could have just given Ellen the year before instead of Glenda Jackson, since she has two.
Yeah. Yeah.
And deprive the world of Glenda Jackson's two Oscars.
Which she may or may not remember that she has.
So
I'm going to side on the not remembering that she has.
That actually makes me think of something interesting, and maybe we could talk it through. Of this year's four acting categories, which is the strongest quality-wise, top to bottom?
In other words, which do we think will stand the test of time?
Sure. Best actor is kind of the one that everybody's eyes might draw to, but personally, I just don't have enough affection for DiCaprio, and I actively don't think Bale is that good.
You know what I mean? Who's that good? Bale. Yeah.
Bale. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the nominations there, the way they... I think it could have been a shortlist for the ages. But I still can't get over Tom Hanks missing. And I've never been a huge fan of his, but I just think he's so great in Captain Phillips.
It's a really, really fantastic performance. And it's... It's him and Ejiofor, I think, are my two favorite lead actor performances of the year.
I mean, I do think in terms of, like, looking back on the year, I think supporting actress is going to age well, even though, you know, you might take issue with a person here or there.
Nick, I know who you would take issue with.
I didn't say anything.
It's a nice variety, and it only has one category for odd person in it, which is something.
This is all hoping that Lupita Nyong'o has a bright and flourishing career ahead of her, where she will get wonderful roles thrown her way.
Mm-hmm.
Knock on wood.
The industry is practically designed to guarantee her success. I can't imagine why we would be worried.
We'll see what she has in store for us in Nonstop in No Time Flat.
Oh, right. The
Liam Neeson
flight plan movie.
Has nobody else on the poster, not even Julianne Moore's name.
Wait. Not even her name?
Nope.
Wow.
I was watching that trailer. They showed that trailer during SNL last night. It might have gone by too fast, but I didn't see Lupita in it. But if Julianne Moore and Michelle Dockery from Downton Abbey are both in it. And so I made the observation that, like, there certainly aren't enough good roles for women in, like, the way they write roles for women in a movie. Like, doesn't it just guarantee that one of them is the bad guy? Like, one, like, you can't have two women characters, you know, trying to be on the heroic side of this. Like, clearly one of them just, like, it's extraneous otherwise. Why would you have two women helping?
Well, except for that Jason Butler Harner, who is, always plays villains, is in it.
Linus Roach.
As is Linus Roach.
You could have multiple villains. I'm just saying, like, it just feels like, well, that's one woman too many. Why would you have two women? Like, one is clearly a villain.
Speaking of one woman too many.
Maybe there's a lesbian subplot. Let's just think creatively. The last time this happened with Liam Neeson was Chloe, and we know how that went. So.
Oh, God. This is a Chloe reunion. It's also a The Following reunion with Julianne Moore and Linus Roach. So really, like, all the great films are represented.
Lesbians are going to be blasted into the sky by unseen forces.
I was going to say. Yeah. But I'm suddenly excited to see this.
I'm kind of really excited to see. Like, this is the perfect time of year for a movie that looks that junky. And, like, I'm ready for it. I'm open.
Well, and it comes out Oscar weekend, essentially.
Perfect. I'll go see that in the afternoon on Saturday, and I'll come home and watch The Indie Spirits, and it'll be wonderful. I'll get such whiplash that I'll be incapacitated for Oscar Day. It'll be great.
Speaking of one woman too many, have we all seen Stranger by the Lake?
Yeah.
That's a hilarious transition. Yes.
And what is our opinion? I've been laughing about, I wish I remembered whose tweet it was, but like putting the cock back in Hitchcock.
Yeah, true.
That might have even been the pitch. That might have been the tweet they sent to people for funding.
I'm wondering what we think of the direction, because I personally thought it was insanely well directed.
I saw it all the way back at New York Film Festival, so it's been a while. And my initial tweet-length reaction was, that's a great way to get ticks, guys. It's everything that happens in that movie. That's just a super, super great way to get a tick.
I think it's a Gran Torino-est possible response to Stranger by the Lake. I'm impressed.
I adored that movie, though. I thought it was really, really fantastic. I was expecting to be kind of, like, titillated, obviously, and it's, like, incredibly sexy, but it's also really, it's got a brain behind it, and also not just for, like, the stylish thriller elements. I feel like it does have a lot to say about self-segregated communities and the elements of danger that we seek out and that we accept within these sort of like self-selected communities, and I don't know. I think it's remarkably entertaining beyond just the fact that it's like the gay blue is the warmest color choice of this year, where it was just sort of like those two were the two Cannes movies where everybody was like, well, if you want explicit lesbian sex, you have this. And if you want explicit gay male sex, you have this.
They should have just released them as a double feature.
They really just should have. Yeah. No, I think it's wonderful. I'd like to see it again now that it's back in theaters.
I liked it for sure. I saw it in Toronto, so it's been a while for me too. But I think my favorite thing about it was the sort of tension between, like, there's some kind of comedy in it, right? That that is has a really funny.
Yeah.
Like, I just kept laughing at how, if you guys, people listening, see the movie, that it's so structured, especially for like the first half or so, as just a series of repetitions, like shots that you've seen before and routines that just keep repeating. And for obvious reasons, you'll probably know about if you know the movie's a murder mystery, they start getting thrown off. But there was just something funny about watching a bunch of gay guys like push their own envelopes a little bit by being on this nude beach, but also every single person parks his car in exactly the same spot every day and has their own way that they're going to do this. Like, it just, that just struck me as hilarious.
And like, well, and everybody's
their big
got
departure
their own
is what they're wearing from one day to the next, or, you know, only briefly for, but yeah. Today I'm wearing a yellow t-shirt that I'm going to take off. Today I'm wearing a red t-shirt that I'm going to take off, but same car, same spot, whatever.
Yeah.
And a lot of, same seating arrangements.
Yes, exactly.
On the beach.
And, like, every day being like, who's that guy? He always sits over there. Oh, my God, he's here again. The relationship between our main guy, I can't remember the name, Funk, I guess, right? The young guy. His relationship with, is it Henri who was the guy who nobody can quite figure out why he's on the beach.
The old fat guy over
always dressed.
The corner. Yeah.
Their relationship was amazing, I thought.
I loved it. It's my favorite part of the movie.
I did think it was, in terms of its actual like content, I think it does an amazing job of filling out its running time, you know? Because really, it's like what you're saying. It's like the same sequences sort of over and over until it gets thrown off.
Yeah.
But even then, it's still formally sort of the same, just with a new sort of understanding of danger.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would say as it went on, I felt like, not that movies have to have depth, like they don't all have to, but it did feel like at a certain point I had kind of gotten what I was going to get from it. And the murder mystery plot, I don't know if it was just that, like, its read on how people behave, even if you're caught up in a new habit that's pretty titillating and you're going to do it even if you shouldn't. Like, it didn't quite gel with me that people were making the decisions that they were making. Mm-hmm. And things about the end just felt really determined in advance, I guess. So I just kept liking all the peripheral stuff, like all the little side characters that you meet every time he goes back into the grass. Like the masturbator and the mad husband. Mm-hmm. That's my man. Like, you're at a cruisy nude beach. Like, but I loved that stuff.
Yeah.
I thought the atmosphere was heightened enough that bad decision-making, let's say, didn't quite throw me off as much, just because I feel like with that kind of sort of noirish element to it, that, like, that just sort of felt like of a piece with the genre and with... Mm-hmm. Everything that was going on, I feel like it took me out of reality enough that I sort of rolled with that.
I would suggest that everybody goes to that, and the other one out right now that is very worth seeing is Gloria.
Oh, yes.
You two have just been laying into how much you hate for like four podcasts in a row. So I don't know why anyone should go.
But yeah, unfortunately, we do have to have a very short podcast today. My cat, who does not care about the movies and does not realize that this is an important time of year, is making veterinarian demands on me.
That's what cats do.
He has very bad timing.
Some people just can't stop asking for health rights. It's amazing. All right. Well, see you at the beach, guys.
Yeah.
You know where I park.
Where I'll be parked.
I sure do.
All right. See you next week.
Bye.